The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Hour One Podcast.
Hey, very pleasant. Good afternoon. We've made it to the sixth week of the SEC season, and huge games tomorrow, none bigger than LSU going to Jordan-Hare Stadium. A lot to do today, but we don't want to keep our first great guest waiting because he has a lot to do as well. He is Coach Gus Malzahn of the Auburn Tigers, just about 24 and a half hours away from kick. Coach, thanks for making time. I know coaches are busy on the Friday before. Good afternoon. And what's it like this close to kickoff?
Well, first of all, we're excited to be back home. Obviously, playing the defending national champs, that's big. You know, we've had three games in a row that's went really down to the last, possession of the game. And we've come up with a short end. So, you know, we're needing to bounce back and get a victory. I know our guys are really excited to be back home playing these guys.
Yeah, and listen, nobody watching or listening needs any of us to talk about the importance of this game. It's always just a classic, or usually is. And last year, Coach Ogeron said many times that Auburn probably gave LSU the toughest game along the undefeated trek to the national championship. Every game is important, but what does this game mean to your program?
Yeah, it's really big, and you're exactly right. Last year, you know, we were probably at one play, maybe two plays away from having a chance to win. And the year before, we were up the whole game, and I think we had two 15-yard pass interference calls back-to-back. They kicked a field goal the last play of the game. So two very, very tough losses. I know the guys that have been there and played these guys are extremely motivated. And I told our guys, it may come down to that one or two plays again, tomorrow. And we've got to find a way to make those.
You had to do it last week. You needed a drive at the end of the game. And people speculate, what does that help, hurt? Obviously, it helps. It does not hurt. But when you get something like that on the road, what does it do for your team as you get back home and get to turn around and play a big game like this?
Yeah, it does nothing but help. And, you know, it's so unique this year, Paul, with 10 SEC games. And we knew going this season there was going to be a lot of games that would go down to the last possession. We worked extremely hard in fall camp on those last-minute scenarios. And then, of course, last week, the way we won it. Our defense, their backs were against the wall. They had to get the ball back. But we didn't have to use our timeouts. They got the ball back. And then, of course, I think we went 82 yards for a touchdown to win the game. And then our defense held on. So we can take that experience to really help us moving forward with the next close game we have.
Coach Malzahn, let's talk about Bo Nix for a second. We had a great conversation with him a few weeks ago, and it just seems like whenever you're the quarterback, you are going to carry the burden and get the criticism. You understand that, having coached that position for a long time. How would you assess Bo so far, midway through this season?
Well, I think he's done a solid job. You know, we've got to be good around the quarterback, and I've said this before. We've had the last 2 weeks were the first time that we had our five starting offensive linemen together in practice, you know, for all 3 days. And, of course, we rushed for 200 yards, you know, both of those games. That really took a lot of pressure off everybody. And then Bo had his best game last week. We went on the road. He protected the football, which he's done a really good job other than the week before, which was very uncharacteristic. But, we got to be better around him. I really think running the football and doing the things to kind of help him. And to help our offensive line, too, has been really good. And we'll continue, down that road.
Football seasons are grinds. And you mentioned the uniqueness of this year with the conference-only schedule. And as a fan, it's fairly exhausting to watch because there are no breaks. There are no easy afternoons. What's it like as a head coach?
Yeah, it's bring your lunch, every week. Of course, we've had traditionally one of the toughest schedules in the league every year, so I don't think it's a shock to our system. What's different is this is the sixth SEC game in a row for us without a break, and I don't think we've ever had that. And I know LSU had the luxury of having 1 week off, and so we've tried to be very smart this week. We want to make sure our guys are fresh, but just the mental and physical grind of having to bring your lunch every single week to play your best football, and when games go down to the end and everything that goes with it adds that much more, stress to it.
As a coach, you're in the midst of this, and listen, you do this every year, but the uniqueness of this season has added to it. But the players get tired, they get exhausted. How do coaches deal with the stress and strain of a run like the one you've been on?
Yeah, when you add everything that's going on, you know, with COVID and the racial unrest and everything that led up, not having spring practice and just everything that goes with it, it's so unique, it's so unusual. And really, you know, I just told our guys, you know, the teams that can adapt, the teams that can kind of hang in there and just get up through the mentally ups and downs of everything is going to have a chance to be there at the end. And that's kind of been our message. I mean, we got off to a tough start, obviously had a tough loss against, you know, one of our rivals, Georgia, and then a tough loss 2 weeks ago. But our message has been, let's get a little bit better each week. I think it's going to be extremely challenging for teams to do that. I think we've got a chance to do that. And obviously, you know, getting a victory tomorrow is going to be, you know, huge if we can do that along the way.
And Coach, before you go, you mentioned COVID, and it would be great one day to have a conversation without that, but you can't. You dealt with it early on. Everyone has dealt with it in different ways. We saw what happened at Florida. We've seen the stories around the country. How do you deal with that in the moment? Because you really never know what the next knock at the door is going to bring.
You're exactly right, Paul. So we get tested three times a week, and it's just that stress of that next morning when I get that text, you know, about, hey, were we all negative or was there anybody positive? So that's a game within itself, but our guys have handled ourselves extremely well. We've had zero positives since the season started. Now, we had our hands full back in fall camp, and we didn't have our whole group together hardly at all, and that kind of put us a little behind, but our guys have done a super job since the season has started as far as the COVID etiquette is concerned.
Coach, thanks for making time. All the best tomorrow. We hope to see you soon.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You got Coach Gus Malzahn 24 hours before the big game against LSU at Jordan-Hare Stadium, and he mentioned COVID, and I'm sure most of you by now have followed the story out of Clemson, South Carolina, where Trevor Lawrence tested positive yesterday. We are going there next and talk to Holly Rowe and get the absolute latest on the most well-known and perhaps best player in the country, how he's dealing with it, missing tomorrow, but how much more?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we welcome you back. Great to have all of you here on a Friday afternoon. The big story broke last night. Trevor Lawrence testing positive for COVID. He'll miss BC tomorrow. But what about next week? We head right there to the epicenter of the college football universe, and our friend Holly Rowe has been covering this story since she began reporting it last night. Holly, thanks for the time. Let's just turn the clock back to last night, 8, 9 o'clock, rumors started flying. I know you got it confirmed very quickly. Take us through the timeline, and how crazy was it?
Well, it was crazy in this, Paul, because we had actually just spoken Wednesday morning at 10:15 with Trevor Lawrence. Our broadcast crew, who is doing this game of Joe Tessitore and Greg McElroy, we spent about 30 minutes on the phone with Trevor, and he appeared to be fine. Dabo Swinney said he got a call around lunchtime yesterday, Thursday, that Trevor had tested positive for COVID. He said, you know, I just thought, all right, it's the next guy up. He walked out of his office, and one of the first people he ran into was freshman quarterback DJ Uiagalelei. I'm learning that. And DJ was in the quarterback room watching film by himself, and he had to tell him, hey, it's your turn. You're the next man up. And he said he was very calm. He was watching film, and he's ready for this moment. But, you know, Trevor Lawrence is at home. He is isolating right now. They are reporting that he has mild symptoms. But we were able to confirm he did practice Tuesday and Wednesday. I asked Dabo, is he concerned that there would be more of an outbreak on this team because Trevor was at practice on Wednesday afternoon? And he said, no, we think we've got this pretty isolated. He said they were able to confirm the source of Trevor's contact, and it was not here in the football building. It was an outside source. So that's all I know right now. But I think my favorite line of talking with Dabo Swinney today, he said, and I quote, the only timeline that I'm worried about right now, referring to whether the timeline for him to play against Notre Dame will work or not, his only timeline he's worried about is Boston College. He said, I'll let the rest of the world worry about that timeline. I'm worried about a very good Boston College team.
No, and I can understand that because a couple of years ago, it wasn't a similar situation, but it was an injury, and we all remember Clemson lost to Syracuse. I believe it was on a Friday night. And Dabo understands things can happen, but I want to go back to what you said about Trevor, and I have no earthly idea. I'm just trying to gather information like everyone, but how do you think, you know, at some point he clearly must not have come in contact. That's so interesting, Holly, and obviously very fortunate, is it not?
Yeah, it is, because I was curious about the timeline myself, because if he was at practice Wednesday and that test that he had taken Wednesday morning came back yesterday as a positive, I asked Dabo if he was concerned about that and him being in contact with his teammates on Wednesday. And Dabo said he was not concerned about it, that they think they have a very good handle on it. Of course, they are testing again today, as is their normal procedure for a game week. And I'm sure we'll know more tomorrow. But as of right now, they do not anticipate any other positive cases coming out of this. But as we know, every day is ground zero. You start from scratch with COVID. But that's what we know right now.
Holly, as you know, because you've been talking to people all day and reporting on this, everyone, those of us who aren't covering the game tomorrow, are fixated on next week. And, you know, the timeline is important based on the ACC guidelines. It's important to know, I guess, at some point when the onset of this was, because of the 10-day guideline that would perhaps, I don't know whether it's possible or not, get him into the Notre Dame game. So are they within that window based on what you've heard?
I don't know that. And Dabo said, I'm not going to get into any of the scientific information or that timeline. All I can tell you is from a personal experience, my son actually tested positive for COVID last week, and he would have told you that he didn't have any symptoms, except for when he got that positive test back, he thought back and said, yeah, I did have fatigue and a headache the last couple of days, and I didn't really think that it was a symptom per se. So it'll be interesting. Only Trevor Lawrence can tell us when his symptoms actually started. But I do know that we spoke to him Wednesday morning, and he did appear to be fine, and he was planning on playing. He was looking forward to that Boston College game. So those are kind of the only clues I can give you as far as the timeline is concerned, and I'm sure we'll hear more about that as the week goes on.
Holly, you're there, and the rest of us are talking about this all day long. I am interested in, not that there's a lot of socializing going on these days, but you are in a college town on a college campus that has been the talk of the sports world today. How would you describe this day at Clemson, South Carolina?
I think that around town, it's a huge story. I think people are concerned. Number one, they're concerned for the health and safety of Trevor Lawrence, but they're also concerned that this is a team that they felt like was on track to be a national championship caliber team. And is this a moment that season is now in jeopardy? Boston College is a very good team, and they will present a huge challenge for Clemson. But here's what I can tell you about his backup, DJ Uiagalelei. He is actually a very high IQ guy. Dabo Swinney today likened him to Deshaun Watson, with very calm personality and composure beyond his years. He said he's got a high football IQ. And this is very interesting, Paul. They have kind of been planning for disruptions in the season with COVID. The offensive coordinator, Tony Elliott, told me that they've been repping at practice as many as six guys sometimes because they didn't want to get to a situation where they would lose one guy and then through contact tracing multiple others. So they've had a real struggle this year getting enough reps for everybody at quarterback, even Trevor Lawrence. And Dabo told me today that DJ, this freshman quarterback who will get his first career start tomorrow, he's had exactly the same amount of reps all season long as Trevor Lawrence has. So he should be prepared for this moment. He's a highly recruited guy. But one other interesting note I'll tell you, Paul, that as you guys debate this for the rest of your time, this might help you. Greg McElroy asked Dabo on our call just now, what is your philosophy about a guy playing if he hasn't practiced? And why he asked that is because if Trevor Lawrence is out right up until the game day, could he play in that game against Notre Dame without practicing? And what Dabo said, and I wanted to quote this exactly, he said, not typically. If a guy hasn't practiced, he wouldn't typically play, but it all depends on who that guy is. Is it a freshman wide receiver who doesn't know what he's doing out there all the time, or is it Trevor Lawrence? He brought up C.J. Spiller that his senior year, he wouldn't practice all week and play in games after maybe one day or a couple of reps on a Thursday because of a toe injury. So if he trusts that player, it's not unthinkable that he would let them play in a game without practicing that week.
I will say a couple of years ago, I think it was Deshaun, it may have been someone else that we got hurt. It was much easier pronouncing Kelly Bryant's name than DJ. Wow, that is a challenge. Before you go, I am curious because you've covered a lot of COVID stories, and I don't know if there's been anything quite like this, back to what you said a minute ago in relation to Trevor, but everyone has different outcomes, but in terms of what you know, and I'm just asking you for observational anecdotes, would it be difficult to play on the 10th day after isolating, assuming that you had some struggle, and he said mild symptoms, or whatever, I don't know what that means, but you probably have encountered far more people than I have who have dealt with this.
Yeah, I would say it's all over the place. I would say some people get severely ill and have a fever and are debilitated by fatigue. If he's having what they describe as mild symptoms, I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility. Like I told you, my personal experience with my son, he had a headache and some fatigue. But after the fourth day, he was fine and he's been up working out in quarantine inside of our home. So that's the only real experience I can go on to let you know that young, healthy people, and my son is of a similar age group, young, healthy people tend to recover pretty quickly from this. And if Trevor does not have a fever, that is one of the most important things. And I don't know that they will ever confirm that or if we will know that. But if he does not have a fever, he would likely be quicker to recover and not have as severe of an infection with this virus. Obviously, I'm not a medical doctor. This is just the experience I'm having as a mom and covering a lot of these stories. But I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that Trevor could recover in 10 days and play next week against Notre Dame. But most importantly, we just hope that he heals completely and quickly.
Well done. Holly, a fantastic job. I saw your first tweet acknowledging or confirming the story last night. And I know you're always busy. You go cover a game, but this week has been a little bit different. Thank you so much for making the time.
Always. Thank you, Paul.
You got it. Holly Rowe on the scene in Clemson. And as all of us who swim in the college football waters know, since last night about 8:15, this has been the only story going. We will take a break and actually talk about some other stories. We hope you'll stick around. Already in the first 24 minutes of the show, Gus Malzahn and Holly Rowe. Can Matt Stinchcomb top that? I'm betting he can.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We welcome you back. We're off and running here. We will get to your phone calls. A number of you I know have been on hold, and we normally get the calls pretty quickly. But with Coach Malzahn, with Holly, other guests, we have been pretty heavy. A number of guests will drop by today. We'll go to all the different games, including a special conversation a little bit later with Roy Kramer, who turned 91 years old today, the former SEC commissioner. We hope you'll stick around for that. Speaking of big games tomorrow night, Arkansas and A&M. It's one of the most eagerly anticipated games of this weekend, and Matt Stinchcomb will be on the call. Matt, thanks for the time, and let's get right to it. Arkansas fans are confident. A&M fans maybe a little cocky. Break this game down for us.
Is that A&M is taking it to the next level? They're cocky. Well, the fact that A&M has this outside shot of sneaking into the college football playoff, if they take care of business through the balance of their schedule, maybe a little confidence will come in handy. This isn't the week to be overconfident, though, that's for sure. Because when you look at Arkansas, what has fueled their kind of resurgence is not only the mentality that Sam Pittman has kind of imbued into that program, and one that needed an injection of enthusiasm and confidence, but it's been takeaways. The defense has been phenomenal in getting the football back for the offense and denying scoring opportunities for the defense. The Arkansas Razorback offense hasn't really gotten going very well early on in football games, which has not bode very well when you face the Aggies. The Aggies do a great job of starting fast, and if that's the case, not necessarily built well to play from behind. But the good news is that if you're a college football fan, when you look at this matchup, historically, regardless of how Arkansas has been playing of late, 5 out of the last 6 times they've matched up, it's been decided by 7 points or less. It's a good contest. And to me, this is probably the game that decides who's the second best team in the West Division.
I just want to stop and think about what you just got through saying, and I know it's justified, but the idea that Arkansas is in this conversation is truly shocking.
It really is. I mean, that's the thing, that when we've done a couple Arkansas games now. We did the Auburn-Arkansas game. We all know how that ended. And now we've got them again this week, and kind of knowing and observing Sam Pittman as an offensive line coach and through the years admiring his work. What stands out is talking with other coaches. When we're talking on the other coaches' calls, the coaches at Auburn, the coaches this week at Texas A&M, it's the level of respect that the other coaches have for the job that Sam Pittman's done in such a short amount of time and in unprecedented circumstances. We've talked about it. This preseason was not normal. This is his first head coaching job at the collegiate level, and to do what they've been able to do, not just win football games at Arkansas, but watching Arkansas play in the way that they are playing this season is pretty remarkable. They're playing hard, they're playing tough, and they're being effective, especially on the defensive side of the ball. He's done a phenomenal job, not just with the locker room, but with the coaching staff that he's built, and you can feel and you can hear the respect that he's garnered from his fellow coaches in this conference.
Matt, I want to ask you about a couple other games, and partly because we just talked to Gus Malzahn a minute ago, and Auburn and LSU, to me, is so intriguing. A lot of people have given up on LSU, and it just seems like Auburn, you've seen Auburn play, you just mentioned the game. I mean, I don't know what to make out of Auburn, and it seems like this is such a critical game for them. They can't bring the refs every week, can they?
No. Well, you said it, not me. It certainly has come in handy. When you look at Auburn, it really is the huge question mark. And having spoken with Coach Malzahn and their offensive philosophy and who they typically have been in running the football, I do think that they have personnel from a skill standpoint to be able to do that. But losing a guy like Brandon Council up front, who's not just a good offensive lineman, but a versatile one that's played, I think, four different positions for their front, not having him available now, that hurts. That hurts a front that wasn't operating at a very high level to begin with. They have been quite literally hurt, injured by a lack of availability, losing a KJ Britt. You talk about the offensive front. They had some opt-outs, et cetera. It has not been, I think, the typical Auburn football year. They aren't as good as they've been in the past. And LSU, on the flip side, you know, I was kind of ready to put a fork in their season, frankly. After the Missouri game, they get into a shootout. You drop that first conference win, the first win for Eli Drinkwitz, and you don't want to have that happen on your watch the way the defense was performing. And then they bounce back versus South Carolina that seemed as if they were starting to figure things out. LSU right now is as big of an enigma as maybe Auburn is right now.
And for LSU to pull this game off, I mean, we know about the quarterback situation with Brennan out. What must they do?
I think more than anything else, they just have to avoid losing the football game. When you look at the way Auburn has operated offensively this year, albeit there have been flashes where they've been able to run the football better. Tank Bigsby, I think, is an emerging star at running back. I don't know that he's enough this year, especially noting the injuries. And then the passing game, when you look at the way Auburn has been able to move the football, it's largely been the horizontal passing game, hope a guy breaks a tackle, and Seth Williams. And can you win a 50-50 ball? And a lot of times he will. But otherwise, I don't know how you make a living on that. And if you're LSU, their offense hasn't been an issue this year. It's been the defense. I just don't know how big of a scoring threat Auburn is in this game. And because of that, they can be a little bit more deliberate, knowing that you're starting a quarterback that didn't open the season as the named starter. Obviously, Miles Brennan not getting the nod again, if that's the case due to injury, then I still think that their offense is still a formidable one. And because of it, I don't know that they ever have to take many chances in this game. Auburn hasn't been the defense that we're used to seeing. And I think because of it, I think LSU can be a good bit more deliberate in their play calling. Don't take any chances and allow Auburn to hang around.
And you mentioned the Auburn defense. We all know what they lost. The NFL is proud to have a couple of first rounders. But what else is going on there? Is that where you start, considering how impactful those two players were last year?
I think you do. I think when you look at that unit last year, those two guys, Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson, they unlocked, I think, their ability, the way they played the rest of their defense. And you look at the way Auburn played LSU a season ago. They reset the model for how you would attack the LSU Tiger offense, and it was the lowest offensive production that the LSU Tigers had the entirety of the 2019 season, a historic offensive output from a team standpoint. They were phenomenal in that regard, not versus Auburn. And it was a one possession game. And it was largely because of that defense, but they could control the line of scrimmage with three bigs, with three down linemen, sometimes with really just two bigs on the line of scrimmage. But those two big guys, and Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson, they're more than one and a half worth of a player. They don't have those guys this year. And then you eliminate KJ Britt that was patrolling the middle of the defensive front seven. That changes things. And because of it, you've got guys that are better space players, but they're not necessarily better box players, more physical players, downhill players. Owen Papo is a very versatile player. He's a productive player. He's a different type of player. I think there's a little bit of a leadership void in that regard, especially on the field of play, but you just can't replace that level of production that Auburn had along the defensive front. They were game-changing type talents. You eliminate one of your leaders in the middle, and next thing you know, you've got a defensive season that isn't on the ropes. And I'm not to say that they are not a good defensive unit, but it is a pretty steep drop-off from what we saw from 2019.
Matt Sinchcomb on the call tomorrow night. Matt, thank you very, very much. Busy first 40 minutes with three guests. We will finally get to your phone calls here in just a moment at 855-242-7285, and we hope you'll stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we appreciate everyone being here. More guests to come as we continue to crisscross a number of big games tomorrow. We've already talked to Matt, Holly Rowe from Clemson, and Coach Gus Malzahn from Auburn. Let's get to the calls. And Bill starts it off in Youngstown, Ohio.
Yes, sir. Why is the university an embarrassment because they want to play football? And this, and now, if you've read the headlines lately, Ohio State and Michigan now are out saying that they're in backing of it because if it happens to them, neither one of them can be in the playoffs, either by Big Ten rules. By you saying that university is an embarrassment, you're making yourself sound like an embarrassment.
So Bill, since you really didn't explain yourself very well, I'm assuming you're talking about something I said earlier today on ESPN about the University of Nebraska?
Yeah, you think? I mean, people listen to your show and know your show. I'm sure they know what I'm talking about.
I wouldn't be so sure of that.
Well, if people pay attention to college football, I would say they know what I'm talking about.
Bill, I don't know how to break this to you, but most people don't care about Nebraska anymore. It's 2020. It's not 1990 or 80 or 70 or maybe even during the 60s when Bob Devaney was there. Nebraska has become an irrelevant football program.
But do you hear what I'm saying?
Not really.
By them coming out and doing this.
So what you're doing? Let me make it easy for the audience, since I don't think you have. Nebraska wanted to play Chattanooga this weekend because of the Wisconsin game being canceled. The Big Ten said no, and you know, fans like you were trying to act like it was really going to help Nebraska play a second-tier program in terms of your college football playoff data points. The fact that Nebraska, you know, won't come within 4 billion miles of the college football playoff, because since Nebraska has been in the Big Ten for the last 10 years, have you guys won anything?
No. Again, do you understand what I'm getting at here? I did not say.
Not really, but anyway. Well,
Ohio State and Michigan.
Well, I don't think Ohio State or Michigan, Bill, are overly concerned. Sam is in Nebraska. Maybe he makes more sense than Bill in Youngstown. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Paul. I appreciate you letting me talk here. What I'm trying to get at, and I think what the other caller is trying to get at, is the fact that you have taken the entire issue out of context when it comes to other programs within the Big Ten. The fact of the matter is that the AD of Nebraska did not say that it's going to help their data point when it comes to the college football playoffs. What he said was that it would help the entire Big Ten when it comes to the data point.
Yeah, but he was the only one, but the Nebraska AD was the only one trying to get a game with Chattanooga.
Because they're the only one that got a game canceled. What happens in 3 weeks when Ohio, the Midwest is the hot spot for COVID-19 at this very moment? It's probably inevitable that more games in the Big Ten are going to be canceled.
Well, Sam, let me ask you a question, and you probably agree, but you know, and I realize you're a member of the Big Ten, and I realize you did not want to see the college football season canceled on August 11th, but the Big Ten did this to themselves. It's not my fault.
You're right. You called the Big Ten leadership yesterday, and in your words, stupid. Those are your words, stupid. And it was stupid of them to come out and not have the foresight to realize that if we say no to Nebraska now, in 3 weeks, if Ohio State's game gets canceled, they're not allowed to go find a team to then go and play, and that hurts them in the eyes of the college football playoff. It's inevitable. It could happen, and they don't have the foresight to do that.
Well, but my argument back to you would be this. If Ohio State lost to – I mean, yeah, I would hate to see Ohio State lose the Penn State game or the Michigan game, but if it lost – had it lost the Nebraska game last week, probably wouldn't have made a better difference. Let's check in with Jim in Illinois. We are stuck in the Midwest right now. Hey, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. Hope you're doing well today.
Thank you.
You know, I wanted to follow up on a call you had yesterday with a fellow named Hazen.
Right.
And Hazen had some interesting stories to tell. He said his father played for the General.
Right.
And he had quite a family history of Knoxville, and he mentioned you know, some stories about. Are you still there?
Oh, sure, Jim, keep going.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Anyway, he mentioned that his father stayed in the dorm at Neyland Stadium and had to sneak out to see his mother, and who lived in an apartment. And you made me laugh because you said you'd been you had taken a class at Neyland and then saw some of the dorm rooms, which were not, in your words, kind of like the lap of luxury. I'm here to tell you I am a survivor of
oh, really?
Life at Neyland.
Well, <South State. laughs> I mean, it was, I did have a class there, I think my freshman year, and I don't scare that easily, other than maybe having to talk to some deranged Nebraska fan, but I started walking around there, and you're talking about like you're the underbelly of the bottom of the world. I mean,
it was like a bomb shelter.
It was like being in a cave. Yes.
My mother freaked when she saw it.
I mean, there are some places that I remember. It's been a few years now. I mean, there wasn't a droplet of light that could get near the rooms.
No. We had you know, the phones, any phones we had were out in the hallway. There were no phones in the
right.
rooms. And but I will tell you this, as I look back, it was still, even though it was a Spartan existence, not Michigan State Spartan, but it's still some of the funnest days I ever had in my life. It was just a good group of guys. Tennessee was winning then. This was the late 60s.
Oh, yeah.
That
great
helped.
Time.
That helped.
Yeah, no, I was about 10 years behind you. And,
yep.
You know, I don't think they still used it for offices and maybe a couple of classes, but I don't think the dorms were still there.
Well, I will say this, and I'll let you go. I did eventually make it to the presidential complex.
Okay, well, I did know that pretty well, since I spent about 3 years there.
Well, it was like going from the outhouse to the penthouse.
Yeah, no, my first dorm was my first dorm room was in what was called Hess Hall, and by the way, for students at UT, it's not the one that you're living in now. I've been to that one. It's the one they tore down to make way for the one you're living in now. And it may not have been as scary as where you live, but I was out of there in about 2 weeks.
You know, you mentioned to Hayes and some of the old-time players you had met, Herky Payne or
right.
Laura Sella. Did you ever meet Jimmy Hahn?
I don't think so. When did he play?
Jimmy Hahn was on the 49, 50, and 51. He actually played with Laura Sella and Doug Atkins.
I mean, I've heard his name.
He was the blocking back on that team.
Right.
In fact, he won the Jacobs Award 1 year as the best blocker in the SEC. But, well, anyway, I just wanted to...
Well, Jim, thank you.
Because I chuckle when I heard you mention not the lap of luxury, because you you couldn't have been more right.
Well, I try to be as accurate as I can, Jim. Hey, thanks. You be well. Appreciate the call from Illinois, a Tennessee fan up there. And let's check in with Jeff, who is in Arkansas. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Paul, how you doing today?
We are well, thank you.
It's great to hear. Hey, I got some questions about what you think about Arkansas Razorbacks this year. They're 2-2. A&M is 3-2, and we beat them. We're going to be 3-2 with them. Auburn's 3-2. What do you think about Arkansas, and what do you think about the rest of the year as far as who they're going to play, and what do you think their finals?
Yeah, Jeff, I think tomorrow will be a pretty tall order. And, I mean, if somehow Arkansas wins this game, then I think everything is on the table in terms of victory. But right now, I think Arkansas, I thought two wins before the season would have been fantastic. I think getting to five, maybe a little more, would be simply unbelievable. I don't know who could possibly take SEC Coach of the Year award away from Sam Pittman right now. Hey, up against the break, we have a lot to do in the final 3 hours. First hour was pretty crazy with Coach Malzahn, Holly, Matt, and your calls. And we are coming right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.